Welcome to another edition of the Hawk Off the Press podcast. I'm your host, Gazette Hawkeyes reporter John Steffi. I'm excited to welcome back to the podcast friend and colleague from 24/7, David Eicholt. David, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, man, appreciate you having me. Certainly a lot to get into with the draft and the portal and what we saw out of spring football. So I'm ready to just dive right into it, man.
Yeah, so let's start with the draft, that being the most recent thing. So pretty good day for the Hawkeyes. Cooper DeJean, second rounder, Torrey Taylor, Eric Hall, fourth rounders. Then you have Logan Lee right at the beginning of the sixth. Overall, I think this is another feather in the cap for Iowa in terms of their player development track record.
Yeah, and you know, we really didn't know how many players were going to go in this draft because, like, even Torrey, there was a lot of projections that said he was going to go undrafted. There were a couple that said he was going to go in the sixth round, a couple that said he'd go in the seventh, and not a lot of people had Logan Lee getting drafted. And Eric All was kind of the big question mark for me, right? Because I think when you see him healthy, I would argue he could have been a day two pick this year just because he can catch the football. He's incredibly strong. He's athletic. His blocking has continued to improve. And, you know, there are a lot of question marks about his health because remember he had back surgery that really shortened his final season at Michigan. Obviously the torn ACL this past season, but for him to go to the Cincinnati Bengals, I think that's a great spot for him with Joe Burrow, and they desperately needed another good tight end. So very strong showing for Iowa. I think we know next season could be a very historic one, but I think it was a pleasant surprise for Iowa fans to see their logo and the Tiger Hawk just being flashed as many times as it was, because again, there were just so many fluid targets. And I think the NFL draft guys really talked about this too. There was like a solidified consensus top 50 prospects and then everybody else. So I think it was a very difficult draft to kind of gauge, but you know, I think it's a really good landing spot for a lot of those guys, as much as I hate Torrey Taylor going to the Chicago Bears against my Green Bay Packers. At least one thing's good, John. I still get a cheer for Torrey Taylor because that means the Bears are having to punt the football. So I'm good with that.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, you might still see a lot of Torrey, and you might be quite happy to see Torrey. Now, you might not be happy to see Torrey after the result of said punt.
Yeah.
Then, like, okay, really? They had to draft him? But if he's on the field, that's probably a good sign for the Packers. But with him, it was interesting too, because like you had a bunch of teams that had needs at punter, then that addressed it in free agency. So like, at least for me, as I'm pre-writing it, I had him like pre-written ready, like still day two. I had that story ready. And then I wasn't sure if that was going to be used until six or seven. Yeah. It could have been really anywhere in such a wide range for him, but punting is winning, as evident by the fourth round pick.
You know, and that's the thing too, because I think he was probably the most difficult to gauge because in my opinion, he's arguably the best punter in Big Ten history. I think he certainly has a strong case, but a lot of the NFL experts talk about positional value. But if you look at the fit with the Bears, you and I talked off camera about this a little bit. I mean, Torrey's one of the best, and the Bears have really struggled playing the football. I mean, I think they're bottom six, bottom seven in most special teams categories. They lose games in ways that you just can't imagine. To see the quote from Stephen A. Smith, what can go wrong will go wrong, except it's not the Cowboys, it's the Bears as well. Torrey Taylor is an immediate upgrade. I think Torrey's going to come in there. I think he'll be a top five punter in the NFL. I think he has that kind of upside. It also helps that he's 26 years old right now, so he's not a 21-year-old kid going into the league, but he's familiar with bad weather punting. There's not a lot of great punters on the market right now, and I think there's a significant drop off between the punters available and Torrey Taylor. So I would argue, based on what the Bears need just to clean up some of the smaller things, I think it's a really good situation. Torrey joked with his girlfriend about how he was going to go to the Bears because I guess his girlfriend's from Chicago. So an all-around perfect story and perfect fit for Torrey. And on top of that, there's a lot of Iowa fans that are Chicago Bears fans, and he's only going 3 hours away. So kind of a neat all-around story.
I have the college friends in my ear now. I'm picturing them saying, hey, northern suburbs of Chicago. That's not true Chicago. But anyways, great story for Torrey. And easier to get to Australia. You can just go to O'Hare, jump on a direct flight.
Yeah.
So obviously he will be able to afford all the Australian airfare that he needs now with the NFL money. So
He
not
doesn't have
too
to worry
much
about
of
the
an
NIL money anymore, so it's fine. Like, he can actually make money now playing football.
What a concept. Everyone else has been able to do this for what, 3 years? And now Tori all of a sudden gets to, and
I would have loved to know how much money Torrey could have gotten, because what punter could have been more valued in the NIL space than Iowa? And like, the way Iowans have embraced him, I just think it's really, really funny.
oh yeah, he has more brand value than a lot of skill position players at most Power
Yeah.
Five schools. Like, Iowa was notorious for its punting, and he wasn't able to get a cent of it in NIL. Obviously, took advantage of NIL for some great causes, but he doesn't get to benefit from it himself at all. Now he gets to. Now, he'll be well off, as well off as NFL punters can be in Chicago. And speaking of money, Cooper DeJean, with him sliding back to 40, he missed out on some signing bonus money, but I guess that means he gets a second contract a little earlier, I guess, is the best news out of that. And really, the clear thing from him out of the media availability was like, he just wants to play football.
I'm still shocked that he slid that far, because everybody I talk to in the NFL space, whether it be scouting in the NFL, whether it be NFL mock draft experts, nobody had Cooper going in the second round. And that's the craziest part to me about this. I think the injury is what cost him. I really
Oh,
do.
yeah.
I think if it does not get injured and he finishes the season, if he ends up, playing on offense a little bit, I think he jumps up in the first 15 picks. I really do. I think he could have been the first defensive player off the board. And that was crazy with the NFL draft. I think the first 14 players were offensive players. I can't remember the last
Yeah.
time that's ever happened. But, Cooper, I think Cooper still has over a $3 million signing bonus. So I think he's still going to be feeling pretty content. And again, you look at the spot and you look at the fit. This is a perfect fit. Absolutely perfect fit. And I think Cooper talked about that in his first availability when he got drafted. He talked about how he wanted to play football. He said he loved his visit to Philadelphia. He loved the coaches, loved the atmosphere. It's certainly going to be a different living situation going from old Bolt, Iowa to Philadelphia. But Philly was near the bottom of the league in passing defense in almost every single category. Yeah, they got Darius Slay, who's a complete stud, but you look at the rest of them, a lot of inconsistencies across the board. Cooper's going to have a chance to go in there and compete, maybe for a starting spot. His positional versatility, they could put him inside, they could put him in nickel safety, and I still argue Cooper's made to be an outside corner. I don't know why he's not really highly looked upon in that area, but he's very physical. His athleticism should not come into question. Very short area quickness, change of direction. And on top of that, he's just a playmaker. I mean, how many times we've seen when he gets his hand on the football, it got to the point where we expected him to score, and that's not normal for a defensive player. So I think it's an awesome fit. He's clearly very, very excited about it. I think, was it Howie Roseman that said, "Dude, I could not sleep last night because I was trying to think of some trades to be able to get up there and draft you." And the Eagles said they had a first round draft grade on him, and they did not have 32 players worthy of a first round draft grade from their scouting department. So Cooper admitted he was a little bit frustrated going the second round, but I think you care about fit more than anything else. I mean, rewind to Tristan Wirfs a couple of years ago, John. I mean, we looked at him as the number one tackle, and he slid all the way to 14. What happened? He got a Super Bowl ring. Things worked out pretty well for him. So, I think fit's more important than anything else, and the real money comes from the second contract.
Yeah, exactly. And then kind of from one end of the spectrum to the other in terms of the draft board, the undrafted free agents. I think Iowa, their guys had gotten some good situations. Look at Noah Shannon's situation with the Raiders. I think that's as good as Noah could ask for. I think Joe Evans, it's not totally easy. They do have some people that have decent NFL resumes, but that's a spot where he can impress. And I think that's a good system for him. And then even Steven Stylianos, it's an uphill battle for him in particular, considering he wasn't even that high up on the Iowa depth chart. But you look at Tennessee, isn't exactly, they've got kind of their solid number one guy, a decent number two guy, and then there's a drop off. So, he's gonna have some competition for that, but that's not a totally impossible role for him either, which I think if anybody said that going into last college football season, like, I don't think anybody would have said that. So I think The Hawkeyes have landed well in the undrafted free agent space as well.
Yeah, I think, first of all, Noah Shen deserves every opportunity that comes his way. I've been very outspoken about it. I think him and the Iowa State players got absolutely screwed. Outside of the fact that they bet on their own team, I think that's where there's really unforgivable territory, in my opinion. But for Noah Shen to continue to battle through with all the adversity, for him to get a shot at the NFL, because, you know, he didn't have to come back last year, John, and he chose to come back, and then he still had to end up missing all of the season. So for him to get an opportunity there, I think it's really awesome for him. You know, I'm going to be rooting for him. He's a great kid. I know you probably think the same thing as well.
Very
well spoken. Awesome, dude. And as far as Stylianos goes, obviously it's an uphill battle, but I'd also argue that the Iowa tight end room is an NFL tight end room.
Yeah, with Luke Lachey as your number one and Eric All for part of the year.
Aston Ostrenka is going to be a pro tight end as well. Like, that's the thing. And Stylianos was a fantastic run blocker. And on top of that, too, I mean, if Parker Hesse can go from defensive end to tight end, still stay in the NFL coming from Iowa, I think Stylianos will definitely have a shot. So Joe Evans, I think it's an uphill battle. I think it'll be great for him if he can make a practice squad to at least give him the opportunity to continue to play football for a living and potentially, you know, get called up a couple times a year to go play for that 53-man roster. But I'm also not going to count out Joe Evans because I watched what he did and how much he really grew up over his 6 years at Iowa. So I think a lot of those guys almost prefer to be undrafted than to get drafted, because then at least they get picked their spots. It's almost like an NBA draft, right? Like, when you get down the final 12 to 12 picks or so, I mean, there have been several Iowa players and several players I know who have literally told teams not to draft them because they want to look around and have the freedom to be able to say, you know what, I think this roster is going to work a little bit better for me. So it's not always better to be drafted. And when you get to that final round, I think, you know, guys kind of have to weigh their options about what's going to work for them. So I'm interested to see what ends up happening. I think Stylianos has a really good shot against Joe Evans. But I do think that there will at least be one of those guys that at least makes a roster, a 53-man roster, not just a training camp or practice squad.
And to your point, Kayvon was the perfect example. As year goes undrafted, signs with Tampa Bay. That was as good of a fit as you could possibly ask for, because that Tampa Bay team needed help at safety. And he makes a 53-man roster. I think he's the only person out of the three state of Iowa schools, Iowa, Iowa State, and Northern Iowa. He was the only one of the undrafted free agents to make a roster last year. And he
still
got
cannot
that.
Believe he was not drafted. That mind boggled me. I know athletically he probably didn't test off the charts, but like, dude, I thought he was going in like round three or four. I was stunned he ended up dropping off.
Well, especially when you look at the, not to get too analytical here, but if you look at the Pro Football Focus, like opposing NFL quarterback rating, and, you know, for the people with a minimum of however many snaps, 100, 200 snaps, Kayvon's was like off the charts in terms of how much better it was than so many others. So that was one where, okay, sometimes the NFL draft machine can hurt itself. Well, you even look at Cooper. Like, obviously, the injury, I agree, is the biggest reason for him sliding. But one of the other possible things is you kind of wonder, okay, were scouts so worried about, is he a corner, is he a safety, that you kind of forget, okay, he's a playmaker. So
turn on the tape.
Yeah, exactly. But we could talk about, there are enough stories of Iowa players overlooked in the draft process, but kind of switching gears to the portal. We're in that time of year, recording this on the 29th. Portal closes on the 30th, but madness does not stop there. The key question here for Iowa, at least in my opinion, number one question seems to be, okay, can they get a quarterback, and how good of a quarterback can they get?
So I think there's a couple things people need to keep in mind. Is number one, the portal closes tomorrow, but remember, teams have 48 hours to submit the names. So we could still see players going as late as Thursday night. And I think grad transfers, there's really no limit for them. So we're going to continue to see names in the portal. But there's absolutely zero question Iowa has to get a quarterback. I don't think that they're in a, you know, they probably are in a situation enough to where they have to get desperate, but you also don't want to bring a guy up that doesn't deserve the opportunity, right? And I think that's going to be the big thing for me, is there are a couple options in the portal. I think you look at the former Northwestern quarterback in Brandon Sullivan. I think you look at, there's another quarterback that just went in. He was a former Cal Poly quarterback, but he was at Washington before, and Sam Heward. He's a former five-star quarterback. I think he certainly could be an option as well. Again, that was as of 30 minutes ago. I have no idea if Iowa will make contact or not, but I still think that's worth noting. And, you know, there's still names rumbling around behind the scenes about if they could enter the portal. And I don't think Iowa is going to rush this. I know they've been in contact with a couple of different players, but there's really nothing that has been really taken that next step as far as quarterback-wise goes. But I'd also remember this, John. Last year, Caleb Brown didn't enter the portal until the final day in that cycle. And then obviously Iowa landed him. So we're going to continue to see names kind of drop. I wish I had the player's name at the top of my head. There's a former UCLA quarterback that's kind of more of an athlete, but he can throw the ball. He's a really efficient runner. I wouldn't be surprised if Iowa made contact with him. But, you know, the quarterback situation is definitely scary right now. I just, you cannot go into the season with Cade McNamara, who I think can be good if he stays healthy. I think this is a great system for him. But then you have Marco Lyonnais, redshirt freshman. You have James Rosar, who doesn't come in until June. You have to do more when you return eight defensive starters. And I would argue there's not going to be many defenses with higher expectations in the country than what Iowa's defense is going to bring back. You have to find a way to help them. You have to find a way to land another quarterback in the portal. I think if you're banking on Cade staying healthy, you hope he stays healthy. But given the last 2 years, it's not responsible to gamble on it.
Yeah, you look at the last fully healthy, or as close to fully healthy as a football player has over the course of a season, the last kind of quote-unquote fully healthy season for Cade McNamara was 2021. And now we're talking in 2024. Yeah. So is it possible that he plays all 12 regular season games and whatever postseason-wise ahead? It's possible. Like, I'm not going to count him out against it. But you look at it, and okay, if a quarterback gets hurt, which it's not just a Cade thing. You can look back pre-Cade. Okay, Spencer Petras had his injury issues. So you can go down the list of times where, okay, you haven't always had quarterback health on your side. And do you want to, in a game where the defense is keeping it close with, say, a Washington or one, granted, Washington is down this year, so maybe not the best example. Yeah. But if you're in kind of a neck and neck Big Ten game and defense is keeping you in it, you'd like to be able to have a little more of a safety net if Cade is not healthy. And I like that you brought up Brendan Sullivan right away, because I think he is the perfect example of somebody that Iowa could realistically get. In his case, too, having the Tim Lester connection in terms of Western Michigan recruiting him out of high school. So, yeah. You have, like, I think he's the perfect example of, like, realistically somebody that Iowa could, that's one, realistic for Iowa to get, and two, possible to really affect the or the quarterback room in a positive way, where you're not losing Deacon Hill to bring in another Deacon Hill.
Yeah, and I think something else that needs to be said too, and I know this is, I don't want to say controversial, this might divide some people. You can't guarantee Cade the starting spot. And that's not a sell. If you talk to a quarterback in the portal, you're not going to be able to sell, hey, you have 2 years of eligibility left. We're going to bring you in. You're going to be a backup for 1 year, and then you'll get the chance to start. No, that's not going to happen with the limited talented quarterbacks that are in the portal. You have to say there's going to be an open competition. And again, how big Cade McNamara was as far as momentum goes was absolutely massive last season. That's why they got Eric Hall. That's why they brought in. That's why Iowa had a great transfer portal haul. But you can't guarantee him the starting spot. I know he has the accolades, but given the health situation, it's a new offense, lack of quarterback depth. If you bring in a quarterback, you're going to say, hey, you know what? We're going to give you every opportunity to compete. Cade might not like it because he's coming off an injury, but this is bigger than one player. And with all of the money that's being thrown around in NIL, with the way the transfer portal is, how important it is for a win now mode more than anything else, you have to say, hey, we're not going to name Cade starting quarterback. If you come in and you impress, we're not going to be afraid to bring Cade off the bench. And that's not going to, you know, that might ruffle some feathers, but I think that's the only responsible thing that Lester and Kirk Ferentz can do.
I'm also curious, kind of, I agree with everything you just said there. I'm also curious what type of quarterback Tim Lesser wants. Like, this is the first time that's been his shopping list in the portal versus kind of previous iteration of the staff's shopping list. So I'll be curious to see, okay, what does he prioritize as he's looking through portal quarterbacks? And, I think he's a good recruiter. Like, I think he can get somebody good, but it's not an easy, you have, I think, quantity in the portal with quarterbacks, but maybe not so much quality. Where,
Yeah.
okay, how many guys do you have in there? Like, you have a lot of people of kind of the quarterback, second or third string quarterback at a power five type level, but how many can make a difference? It's a smaller pool.
No, you're exactly right. And I think you were the one that tweeted this out. I mean, one of Iowa's biggest issues outside of, I think Iowa's passing scheme, the wide receiver, lack of wide receivers, I think that's ultimately been the biggest deterrent from Iowa's offensive scheme. The O-line has not been like super consistent the last couple of years. I think that's played a factor. I don't think the play calling has been good, et cetera. But Iowa's lack of ability to properly identify and develop quarterbacks has really, really put a ceiling on where Iowa could go. And I think you pointed out, I think the last, what, six Iowa quarterbacks have transferred.
Oh, yeah.
When's the last time? I think, when's the last quarterback to actually finish his eligibility? Nate Stanley
I
at
think that
Iowa, because
was.
Petras ended up transferring. Hogan obviously transferred twice. Carson May has transferred. He never played, but he didn't, But you just go down the list and you say, despite what recruiting services may rank them, and every recruiting site's going to have a miss here or there. It's the way
Yeah.
it goes. But Iowa has not been able to identify good quarterbacks for a system, and Iowa has not been able to develop quarterbacks. Tim Lester has to change Iowa's passing concepts, and he has to be able to develop quarterbacks. If those two things happen and Kirk sticks with the offensive line, that's what's going to really turn the corner for Iowa's offense and kind of start to at least chip away at the national narrative or even global narrative at this point. We've seen what teams from London tweet about Iowa's offense at this point, just making fun of it. That's what's going to help change the global narrative that's surrounding Iowa's offense. If they can do those, it's at least a step in the right direction. So if they get Sullivan, I think that's a perfect example of a guy that will have a shot at least contributing to Iowa's quarterback situation. I think you feel a lot better going into the season if you get a guy like Sullivan.
And you were pointing out all the quarterbacks leaving, and most of them have not had success wherever they've gone.
Yeah.
So, like, Deuce Hogan has to leave his scholarship situation at Iowa to walk on at Kentucky and then transferred again to, I think it's New Mexico State. Alex Padilla
Yep.
hasn't been a factor at SMU. We'll see. Spencer Petras sounds like he had a good spring, so we'll see what happens there. We'll see what happens to Joe Labus at Central Michigan. But
Say, Cooper Lagasse from Utah State transferred out after the spring. So I think that might shoot. Spencer seriously might be making a run at their starting quarterback.
which, I will be very happy for him if he succeeds
Yeah, I
there.
would too.
He had a tough set of circumstances here, and, Mountain West might be the place where he can really thrive. And being in just a different offensive system, this system I don't think set him up for success, but that's a whole nother conversation. You were
Yeah.
mentioning with the changes that Tim Lester needs to make, feel like that's a good segue into the other interesting thing from the last 2 weeks, spring football. It was interesting. We got our first taste of what the Tim Lester scheme looks like. We obviously didn't see the whole thing, but I was encouraged by how much, really, the first thing, how much motion there was.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's the thing. And I know people are looking at production from the offense in that spring game. John, I gotta tell you, I really could not have cared less. I was focused on what do the schemes look like and what's it gonna look like when they have the personnel in there. Is Luke Lachey healthy? I think we got our answer there. Jarrett Bowie at wide receiver has really impressed me. I think he could be a guy that makes a fact, brings a different sort of energy. Caleb Brown, this is a perfect system for him. I mean, you talk about a guy, I don't want to say reminds me of Sky Moore, but I think he'll be utilized like Sky Moore was at Western Michigan. I think it makes a ton of sense for him. I loved how much more shotgun there was. They weren't under center as much. There were some RPOs. And the most intriguing thing about the entire practice wasn't anything that took place on the field. I couldn't. Did you get the chance to talk to Jay Higgins at all?
I
I
did
think you were there
not.
for a couple of minutes. So I talked to Jay Higgins for probably like the entire
Oh,
time.
post game, yeah, or post practice. Yes.
So I was there probably the entire time. And I don't know if you were there when he said this, but this is the thing that stood out to me. He said, as a defense, we installed different personnel and different schemes because we wanted to keep pace with the offense. He said it was a stressful spring. But the thing that stood out to me was when he said, Tim Lester really kept it simple today. He must have known there were cameras out there. If that's what Iowa's offense looks like when it's simple, I am very excited about what's going to happen in the fall. Not that they're going to be the most explosive offense in the country. I'm not even going to begin to guess how much of a step forward they'll take. But just from a modern offensive standpoint, different schemes, different running backs, RPOs, not just doing the zone block scheme, routes going past the first down marker on third and four. It's crazy that we're praising this type of stuff, but it's what we've been accustomed to seeing over the last couple of years. If that's what it looked like when it was simple, and if Iowa can get the timing and the chemistry right with the guys when they're healthy going into fall, teams are going to be, I think, a lot more challenged than they ever have been against Iowa. And not just simply because it's the scheme. It's because Iowa has never run anything like this, at least since I started covering Kirk Ferentz, since I've been watching Iowa football for the last 15, 20 years. I'm just so intrigued about how this translates over. I was very impressed with the way Lester, I think, really handled the offense. Forget the production. The schemes was where I was looking for, and I think it shined.
And obviously, you need the personnel to be able to get the scheme. The scheme can only by itself go so far, and that kind of goes back to the portal. But with what you were seeing schematically, it was not like the thousand or however many people it was that, or however many thousand people were braving the cold. It was not like everyone in the free world knew what play was gonna come. And that's what we've been seeing. Like Tyler Newbin said to me basically at the combine, like, yeah, we knew what was coming. So I'm paraphrasing here. Actually, go and find the story if you're all that curious. But
It's pretty close though. I remember you tweeting out the quote.
yeah.
I mean, that's pretty close. That's why they held Iowa like what 11 yards in the second half?
It was insane.
Maybe no, it was less than that. Maybe less than that. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah. So it's you have the schematics there, I think, for the offense to be successful. Now it's just a question of what does the personnel situation look like? I thought the run game was probably ahead of the pass game, I would say. And I'd still
Yeah.
say defense was ahead of the offense.
No question. I like the way the O-line looked for the most part. I like to see them when they're 100% healthy. I think Jangs Dunker didn't participate. Logan Jones obviously didn't participate. With that being said, Tyler Ellsbury needs to find a role because I think he's one of Iowa's best five linemen. Seriously, his positional versatility, I thought he was great when he took over for Logan late in the season. I think he's a guy who can do some damage there as well. It's hard for me to judge the pass game too much because we didn't have the quarterback, you
Yeah,
know, and
you see
that's where it's
Deacon,
at.
nothing against Deacon personally, but you see Deacon, sail the pass over Caden Wegen, which Kirk Ferentz even mentioned in his post game or post practice. I'm so used to saying post game, but post practice, post scrimmage, however you want to call it, where you just didn't see those passes. But yeah, I agree with the offensive line. I think defensive line still had the better day, but it wasn't like the complete one-sidedness that we've seen in past years.
Offensive line, though, too, I feel like is always going to be the weakest part of spring ball. It's always going to be the weakest unit. It'll very surprise me if it's ever not, just because there's new pieces, there are guys trying to get their feet back under them. Defensive line also for Iowa is just loaded. I mean, yeah, they lost Logan Lee. Yeah, they lost Joe Evans. But as Nick Jackson said, YA Black is a massive human being. It's difficult to tell him no. And, YA Black, I think, could be absolutely massive in the middle there. I think Aaron Graves could emerge as a day two pick if he has a big season. I mean, he has that kind of upside there. Max Llewellyn, I think, really shined off the edge. Brian Allen just continues to be a superstar in these open practices, whether it's fall camp, whether it's spring ball. I feel like he's always one of the star players. I'm really intrigued if this is the year that he finally carves out a role. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think the defensive line was ahead. And it's also hard for me to judge the offense too much, not just from a personnel standpoint, but the defense knows the entire playbook. They know what's coming. They've been paying them for 15 practices. So that doesn't exactly help either. So, and on top of that, it's a top three defense going into the in the country going into the season. And I would argue it's the best linebacker trio in the country with Castro, Nick Jackson, and Jay Higgins. Definitely the most experienced. I'm with you. I think the defense had the edge. It's hard for me to read too much into it. I loved what Reese Dockin did at punting. I think he's going to go through his ups and downs, but I think he had that, 150-yarder that rolled inside the 5-yard line, and you're thinking, yeah, LeVar Woods has done it again. He's going to be pretty happy with what he brings to the table. But, I'm still very encouraged about this team. Obviously, I'm in believe-it-when-I-see-it mode when it comes to the offense, but I think there's reasons to be optimistic heading into the summer.
You were mentioning having probably the best linebacker trio or one of the best linebacker trios. You also look at that second team of linebackers. And I think most of those second teamers would be outstanding first teamers in other Power Five programs. Obviously not Ohio State, Michigan, but beyond the very top of the top, I think you could see some of those guys. Those guys have been, kind of waiting in the wings. And now they're waiting another year when you've got Jay Higgins taking his COVID year, Nick Jackson getting the NCAA waiver that I don't think even Nick Jackson expected to have, and Kyler Fisher using his COVID year. I didn't expect him to get either. Yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody was shocked Nick Jackson got it. He deserved it based on how everything sort of ended with the Virginia tragedy, obviously. He even said to us, like, he wasn't worried about a decision. Then he got the waiver, and he said, oh, my God, I need to make a decision. So it kind of snuck up on him. You're right, and I'm happy you brought that up because Carson Schraar, I thought, was one of the best three players on the football field during the spring practice. And that's a guy who obviously has played sparingly in special teams, but he had a pick six. I think he had a couple big hits in the backfield when Caleb Johnson had the ball coming out of the backfield. And there's obviously going to be a huge carryover next season when it comes to linebackers. I don't think anybody's going to know what to expect. But Seth Wallace will have those guys ready. And I think them earning and getting a lot of those snaps in spring practice, I think that's certainly going to end up paying dividends. Jane Harrell's another guy who I've heard had a really, really good spring. That's another guy to keep an eye on. But yeah, Carson Schraar, man, I was really, really impressed with what he brought to the table. So I give them credit for sticking with the system and staying at Iowa because I can't imagine how frustrated they probably are waiting. But I also think it goes to show the culture that Kirk's put in place that Phil and Seth have helped instill as well. So for the linebacker group to really kind of embrace one another like that, it's not what you see everywhere. And I don't think I'm overstating that at all.
And then one last question here. One player based on what we saw at Kinnick and what we had heard the previous month that you would say their stock is rising going into the summer?
Man, that's difficult because it's tough. I'm really tempted to say Caleb Brown. I really am. I know he ended up being one of the best receivers at the end of last season, but I just think he's finally gotten the experience under his belt. I think the system is built for him. I think he's going to be a focal point of the offense. I think another guy I'll throw in there, how about TJ Washington?
Yeah.
I mean, TJ Washington, I think he could be utilized in the backfield. I think he could be utilized if they don't end up getting another wide receiver in the portal. I just really like what he brings to the table. I think he's a special talent, but he has a special set of skills that I think some other players in Iowa's roster just don't have. So I like where the Iowa wide receivers are at. I do think they need more scholarship wide receivers. I think there's a little bit of roster turnover that needs to happen. And I know Iowa's going after another couple of guys in the portal, but I'm really, really excited about Caleb Brown. I think his hands have improved. I think his route running is crisp. And I think that Tim Lester's offensive mind, as far as passing concepts go, it's proven it works. We saw him at Western Michigan. He was with the Green Bay Packers. And I really liked the system that he's trying to put in place at Iowa. So for the offense, I'll say Caleb Brown. Defense, it's so difficult for me just because they return so many different pieces. I'll say Xavier Wampa. I still think when you look at Xavier Wampa, he was probably the sixth or seventh best defensive player on the roster, which sounds insane because he's a five-star talent. I think he's due for a massive year. I think he's really good piece it together. I think this is the year that Iowa fans have been waiting on. I think he comes out and has at least four interceptions this season. I really think that now that Iowa doesn't have a lockdown corner and Cooper DeJean, like a proven lockdown corner guy, I think that's really, really going to put Xavier Wampa in a place to be able to make some plays. So defense, I'll go Xavier.
I'm going to go with John Nestor. We have kept on hearing really good things about him. We got to talk to him this spring. Like, man, that kid's got some energy. Like, just like the pace that he's talking, like, really brings a lot of energy to the room. He's really done a lot of good things. Sounds like he's learning quickly from Phil Parker. I've heard the, is he a young Riley Moss? And we saw him a little bit as a true freshman. That's always a good sign. So I think he's a guy that it'll be interesting to see what happens at that cornerback spot opposite of Jamari Harris. He could be, you know, at this point, 3 months ago, I would have said, okay, yeah, that's Deshaun Lee's job after what he had done last year. And I think Deshaun Lee is still probably the favorite there. But John Nestor, I think, is a contender based on what he's been doing. And it seems like he is quickly on the rise, whether it's 2024, that's kind of his breakout, whether it's 2025. I kind of see the similarities in terms of how, okay, doing some impressive things as a true freshman, kind of almost the same way that Cooper DeJean impressed in the 2022 Citrus Bowl after that 2021 season where he makes the tackle on the opposite side of the field of Wandale Robinson. I kind of wonder if Nestor is on a similar trajectory. Obviously, it's some tough to be in that same conversation as those guys.
I think I'm happy you brought him up too, because what I've heard behind the scenes, I think he's a ball hawk. And that's why I've been told. I mean, I've been told he's among the team leaders in interceptions and forced turnovers on the defense. I think he still takes a few too many risks. And I think that's something that Phil Parker, you know, he said, if you take a risk, you better get the ball. You better create a play. Like, you know, Phil Parker, he does not really mess around when it comes to that. But I've been told Nestor's done a great job. I don't think he's quite as athletic as Riley Moss. And that's not throwing shade at Nestor, because Riley Moss, people forget, was a freak athlete in high school. I mean, he was among the nation's leader in certain, I think, the 110 hurdles. So again, no shame in that. But Nestor's a guy who I think is definitely worth keeping an eye on as well. Another guy I'm kind of all in on, I'll take away the 4 and 5 star guys. Maybe I kind of cheated a little bit there. I still think if Jennings Dunker stays healthy, I really love Jennings Dunker. I think he's a guy who really could put himself on the NFL radar. It's funny because when we interviewed him in the spring, John, I mean, I commented to you and a couple other people, I'm like, this guy looks bigger than he has. And he goes, oh yeah, I lost 20 pounds. And I'm sitting there like, where'd you lose the 20 pounds? He's still absolutely, I mean, I'm six, you know, I'm a pretty tall guy myself. And I find myself looking up at him still, and he's just so big. But that's a guy where if he stays healthy, I really, really like his trajectory on the offensive line. I think Iowa needs a star tackle or a star guy to emerge on the line, because I think that's really going to help raise the level of everybody else on that line. If Iowa's offensive line is good and they allow Tim Lester and that Iowa team to get in that run pass options and get those quick routes to develop and be efficient, again, it's hard not to get excited about it. So I'll go Jennings Dunker to kind of take away from the 4 and 5 star talent.
Well, no summary of Jennings Dunker is complete without also mentioning back to back. I think it's back to back. Solon Beef Days, Hay Bale.
Yep.
Champion. Like,
I hope Logan Jones is healthy, because I really want to see them go at it again this summer.
Yes. Like, that could be they should televise that matchup if that indeed happens. But you saw just the brute strength that Dunker has. And now it's like now he's been able to refine his game. Obviously, he had injuries last year too. But if he has a fully healthy 2024, watch out.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he stays healthy. And same with Mason Richmond. I mean, I don't think people realize, I'm not making excuses to the offensive line, but I don't think people realized how injured these guys were. And they kept playing week after week. The fact that Logan Jones saw the field at all the final four games is kind of incredible to me, because I don't know how he pushed through that. Mason Richmond probably had 3 or 4 different things wrong with him. Now I'm not saying major issues, but there was definitely hurting, and they still went out there and competed. So if they stay healthy, I mean, I think that's going to be a big key for the offensive line and for Iowa as a team. I mean, is the injury luck on their side, or are they going to be plagued like they have in the past couple of seasons?
And that goes back to the playmaking too of, you know, last year when you have 7 or 8 against 5, that math just does not work well for the five offensive linemen. So if you have a little bit of a passing threat, that I think gives the offensive line a chance to succeed more. Because I've heard from people at the NFL level, like, oh yeah, next year, you know, gonna hear about some linemen. So, you know, they've taken notice that these guys have the skill, but you need to be able to actually have, you know, favorable matchups as well. But there's another, what, 4 months, and I think 4 months and 2 days or something like that till season actually gets underway.
I believe that's it. Yeah, but I'll tell you what, man, I'm going to be absorbed in the next 2 or 3 months and checking out.
Yes.
I'm going to have content, but man, I'm after this women's basketball run and football and spring, I mean, I know you're probably right there with me. We're ready to just kind of breathe a little bit.
Yes.
Just kind of breathe a little bit.
Nice change of pace a little bit this week. Well, David, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on again.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in to another episode. Until next time, we will talk Hawks later.
Get a daily update from the Gazette with our daily news podcast. Add it to your podcast player or your Alexa-friendly device to get a bite-sized local news update each day. Check it out at thegazette.com/podcasts.